Toby Altizer with you for about another hour and a half, taking you up until Nats baseball. Charlie and Dave going to take over at 3:30, getting you set for game two of the series between the Nats and the Padres. Maury Brown of Forbes going to be joining us in about 25, 30 minutes to talk about this MLB salary cap and floor proposal from Major League Baseball. Is that a good thing for the league? Is that something that could create problems? Will we have a long lockout, and how bad would that be for baseball? We'll talk about that coming up with Maury Brown at 2:30. 3 o'clock, when I get back into the Nats fully with talking about what to watch in the month of June. But right now, staying on the Nats, how sustainable is what they're doing? How sustainable is this level of play? Is this something that we can still expect to see a month from now? Is this something we can still expect to see in July? How sustainable is the way that they're playing? So when you look at where the Nationals are right now, it's so impressive to see the way that they've been able to score runs and be one of the best teams in the league in the offensive categories. I mean, if you just look at where they're at right now, runs scored in all of Major League Baseball, they're number one with 311. They lead the Atlanta Braves by 4. In extra base hits, doubles, they have the most doubles in the league. They have the 6th most homers in the league. Total bases, they're 3rd in the league with what they're able to do. Walks, they're 12th in the league. Striking outs, they are 19th in the league, so they're not striking out. They're almost top 10 in fewest strikeouts, or no, excuse me, most strikeouts. They're stealing bags, one of the best teams in the league at that. They're tied for 2nd with the Milwaukee Brewers with 57 stolen bags. They've been so impressive to watch this season with the way that they've been able to drive in runs. They have the 4th highest OPS in baseball, 744. The Braves, Yankees, and Dodgers, only teams ahead of them. So when you look at their hitters, you wonder, is this something that's sustainable? And I don't know that we're going to look up at the end of the year and the Nationals are going to be the top offense in the sport. I don't know that we're going to look up at the end of June, really, and see that the Nationals are at the top of the sport. But I do think a lot of what they're doing on the hitting side of things is sustainable. I mean, if you just look up and down their roster right now, you know, Dalen Lyle has a 736 OPS. I think that's kind of the player he is, if not maybe even a little bit better. James Wood has a 959 OPS. Okay, maybe he cools off. Maybe he comes down to 875, 880. I think he's a 900 OPS kind of player. So I don't see him significantly dropping off. He is a budding superstar in this league. CJ Abrams has a 936 OPS. I don't see that coming down too much, really. I mean, he's probably like an 850 OPS kind of player the way that he's played this season and the differences that he's made. I know there's 100 points higher than what we've seen the last couple of years, but I think we've seen some real differences with him, and I think that's kind of the player you see in him. So I think, okay, maybe you see a little bit worse from your top two hitters. Maybe they cool off a little bit. Maybe they're not, you know, 959 and 936 OPS. Does that take you from the number one offense in the sport to somehow bottom 10? No, it does not. Jacob Young has a 675 OPS. That's higher than what it's been. So maybe you could say he's going to come down to earth a little bit. He's, you know, had 7 home runs. But I also think that he's going to steal more bags, I would think. He's only got 3 stolen bags on the season. Luis Garcia's got a 698. Putting him in great opportunities and optimal spots to be successful, okay. I don't think it's crazy to see him as a right around 700 OPS type of player. You've seen Curtis Meade be an 856 OPS. Maybe that's one you could point out and say, you know, he's overachieving a little bit. K-Bert Ruiz at 798. Maybe you look at him. But then you can look on the flip side and say Nassim Nunez has a 492 OPS. You would expect that that position is going to get better, whether it's Nassim Nunez or whether they have to call somebody up like a Seaver King to take his spot. So I think you look at this offense overall, and for the most part, it seems sustainable. I think you look at the way that they are playing, and it's a different team than what we've seen in the past. The way that they go about teaching their guys, the way that they go about preparing for each and every day at the plate is so different than before. And so I don't think that you look at this and think that this isn't something that can be somewhat sustainable. I think that this is something that they can continue to hit at least top eight level in Major League Baseball. I thought it was interesting last night hearing from Blake Butera. And it's one of those things, whether you agree with him or not, the proof is in the pudding with the way that the Padres managed last night. When you look at the way that teams are starting to approach this lineup now, Blake was like, yeah, they're definitely approaching us differently now. The depth of our lineup, the way that we're able to mix and match, the way that we're able to get guys into perfect spots to be successful, they're approaching things differently. The way that it went last night for the game, Jason Adam, who is one of the best setup men in all of baseball, didn't even start the eighth inning because they didn't like the left-on-left matchup. So Adrian Morejon got one more batter into the eighth inning. They bring in Jason Adam. He faces the minimum of three batters, and then they decide to go to Mason Miller to get a four-out save. They didn't even let him finish the eighth inning.
And I think it says a lot about the top of the order, especially with Wood as your leadoff guy, how much respect he now commands at the plate, because you come in a high-leverage situation trying to protect a two-run lead, and they go, well, we have one of the best setup men in baseball on right now, but we need even better than that to get the top of the Nats order out right now in the biggest spot of the game. Because they felt like if they could get through that eighth inning and survive, which they did by the skin of their teeth, that they would be perfectly fine and they'd have no problem with the middle bottom of the Nats lineup. But the top of that Nats lineup right now is commanding a lot more respect than people would have imagined.
Well, and I think even more so because James Wood has generally gotten a lot of that respect where he gets, once they go to the bullpen, James Wood faces lefties the rest of the game. That's kind of been the case because he's the only guy on the top of the scouting report the last couple of years. And so I think that does factor into a lot of the how you have to talk about James Wood with the way that he's developed. I mean, this is a guy that has been at the top of the scouting report, circled in Sharpie, we can't let this guy beat us, the last couple of seasons when the team wasn't even very good. And so the way that he's been able to improve has been spectacular. But last night, I have to look up the exact scenario just to make sure I'm correct on this. But they opted to go to the pen a little bit early because of the fact that Giolito was struggling. But it was a big spot, and they went to the pen for K-Bert Ruiz. K-Bert, a guy that early in the season was having very forgettable at-bats. So yeah, that was the situation last night in the third inning. Bases were loaded. So I get that there's a big spot there, so maybe it's something you might go to the pen anyways because Giolito was struggling a little bit. But they go to Yuki Matsui to turn K-Bert Ruiz around from the left to the right side, and that shows you that this team is a little bit different. That shows you that this lineup is a little bit different. The only guy that used to get matched up against in the entire lineup was James Wood. And now you're seeing other guys start to thrive in those sorts of moments. And two, the way that the Nationals do this with their lineup and their construction and everything, you know, Curtis Meade, when he was playing first base, if they had a lefty on the hill and then you had to switch things out, well, then here comes Luis Garcia or vice versa. And Andres Chaparro and Louis are now kind of sharing that role at first base and those sorts of things. Bebas coming off the bench, Tana coming off the bench to put you in an optimal spot if they need a left-handed bat to come off to face the righty. Like, they try to put their guys in the best spot possible. So when you look at the hitting side of things, even if it cools off, even if it slows down, even if they have a stretch for a couple of weeks where their offense isn't nearly as good, they're still going to be one of the best offenses in the sport. I mean, seriously, the way that they've been able to score runs has been absolutely incredible. I mean, say they go on a weak stretch where they don't score a whole lot. Maybe they get shut out a couple of times. The number 10 team in baseball in terms of runs scored is almost 50 runs behind them. They'd still be top 10 in the sport. The Astros are at 262 as the 10th team in baseball. The Nationals are at 311. That's been incredible. So I think that a lot of what they're doing offensively is going to be sustainable. And then when you look at some of the other things for this team that are not very good, I would think that they're going to start to even out a little bit more. And you've seen some of that pitching-wise for this team. They've given up so many runs. I mean, it's been unbelievable to see the amount of runs that they give up. But their ERA is 25th in the league, tied with the Orioles at 4.65. I think they've given up the most runs in baseball this season. Pitching's already starting to improve. You're seeing guys start to settle into their roles. You're seeing guys start to get a little more comfortable with the way that they're being used. And so I think the pitching's going to get better. I don't know that it's going to suddenly become top half of the league, but I think it could get marginally better. So even if the bats take a little bit of a step back and the pitching gets a little bit better, then all of a sudden that's some sustainability. That's kind of evening out a little bit. And that's how you can continue to be, you know, around a 500 ball club. And you look up teams with the most errors in Major League Baseball, that's the Nationals. And it's not even close. Strober, how about this? The number two team, I want you to take a guess at this. The number two team in baseball with errors is the Tampa Bay Rays with 40. How many do you think the Nationals have?
I think they have 59.
53.
Mm.
13 more than anyone else. 13 more. And that's with Nassim Nunez being in the lineup, who's a good fielder and really only out there for his base running and fielding. So that's something that's, again, going back to the hitting, I think that could buoy it a little bit. That's with the outfield, I think, actually being a pretty good outfield for a majority of the season. Now that Cruz is back up, I think he gives you more in the outfield. You know, you got Cruz, you've got JY in center field. Dalen Lyles improved significantly. I know the numbers, the metrics aren't really favorable to Wood, but I think his defense has been better this season. So that's actually a pretty good outfield. You know, I think there's a little bit left to be desired at first base. Second base, you feel good about. Shortstop and third base is where a lot of those errors are coming from. And actually, catcher, ironically, a position that we have not thought very highly of defensively for this team in quite some time, has actually been pretty good. If you look at K-Bert Ruiz, this is something that's slept on a little bit as he's been in a hot streak at the plate. He's been good as a fielder this year. According to Baseball Savant, K-Bert Ruiz is 85th percentile in fielding run value. Last year, he was 5th percentile. 2024, he was 6th percentile. 2023, he was among the worst in the sport at 1st percentile. This season, 85th percentile. He's been fantastic at blocking, framing. He's still got a struggle with his arm at times. He's not going to throw up runners out, but his blocks and framing have been fantastic. So they deserve a lot of credit for developing there. So let's just say the offense or the defense is marginally better. Again, those little things, those little margins all of a sudden make this team better. And so even if the offense takes a step back, well, maybe they don't lead the sport in errors. Maybe they pitch just a little bit better. So I think that a lot of what they're doing is sustainable. Now, does that mean that they're going to go 500 and they're going to finish this year 81-81? I don't know. And that's something I want to get your guys' thoughts on next, 800-636-1067. But I do feel like a lot of what they're doing can be sustained at a pretty high level for quite some time. 800-636-1067. If you'd like to hop in, Toby Altizer with you here on Overtime on The Fan. The Nationals are at 500. How sustainable is it? 800-636-1067. Maury Brown going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes to talk about the MLB salary cap and floor proposal for Major League Baseball to the union. Let's get out to Mark in Landover Hills. Mark, what's going on?
Hey, what's happening?
What's going on, Mark?
Everything's good. I was kind of funky there. I usually listen to your show and everything, and it was just blank and it was quiet. So I knew you'd probably be getting to me sooner or later. So I just stuck with it. But I was telling Ben, if I wanted to ask Toby if he would be happy if they had 81 wins this year. But I can see if some things break their way, like you were talking about, Toby, where they might finish in the high 80s. I don't know about wild card, but what do you think, buddy?
No, I appreciate it, Mark. I think that getting to 500 for the full season might be a little bit getting ahead of our skis. I mean, we're at May 30th, and we're thrilled that they're in 29-29. So I do think that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. But they also might make some moves in terms of trading pieces away, so I think that could play into it. But I think, Strobes, I'm curious what you would think of this. I think if this team got anywhere in the mid-70s, you'd feel pretty good. I mean, what was their win total before the season? Like 66.5? So anything in the 70s, I think, is a win. But this team, the last couple of seasons before they fell off last year, was 71-91. I think if you see significant improvement over that where they get just like 75 wins, I think that's a massive step forward for this team.
It's interesting to think about because when they had 71 in back-to-back years, everybody was expecting last year to be the one where maybe you get the jump up and you're around 500 or flirting with it at least, because I think everyone was hoping last year was the year everybody would turn the corner in the previous rebuild. And now we've kind of tampered our expectations going into this season because we knew that this would be another drawn-out kind of rebuilding process. But if you get to 77 wins or something like that, you're like 4 or 5 games under 500 by the end of the season, maybe you feel like you already have a stronger foundation than you did with the previous group, and then you can expect a little bit more the next season and really start to see that window open up kind of brighter than it was in the previous years. I think we were pretty happy with 71 wins when it happened back in 2023, just considering how bad 2022 was.
Yeah.
But it never really got any better than that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is if you feel like they're improving, the win total doesn't matter as much, but I think the win total for this team with the way that they've been playing, I mean, I think anything in the 70s feels like a win. And especially if they get closer to 75, which is kind of where I think they would end up right now, maybe just slightly below 500. You know, I think that's not too bad. And if this team is still playing 500 ball by the end of June, maybe it's a different discussion. Maybe we're actually talking about this team trying to get to 80 wins. And if you're getting to that point, which is something I want to talk about to end the show, you know, around 3 o'clock, if this team is still playing that level of baseball at the end of June, going into July, are we having different discussions about, you know, who are they trading, or are they trading for a guy maybe that they can soft buy or something like that? Those sorts of things. Are they maybe trying to add some pitching that's controllable and maybe move off an outfielder that they have on the 40-man for it or something like that, that, you know, you feel like you're improving the team but still making sure that you keep the focus of, you know, building this thing so that you're good in 27, 28, and 29 in the main focus, then that's something that they could do. So I think that is a big thing. But for them, this seems sustainable. And this seems just, you know, a lot of the stuff that they have has allowed them to take this major leap. And I think, frankly, I'd be curious to ask them, and I don't know that you'd be able to get a truly honest answer, but I wonder if you're Blake Butera, Ani Colombi, Paul Toboni, if from watching afar, if when they took over this thing, if they truly thought that there was as much talent on this major league roster specifically as there is, or if they found out when they got over here and started to use some of the different technology, different techniques, some of the different ways that they are training and working with these guys, if they started to see like, oh, they're better than we even imagined. There's more talent here than we thought. Because I almost get the sense that it's a little bit like that, where it was like, oh, okay, there's going to be a lot of work to do here. This is going to be a lot of stuff. And then they got to working with these guys and like, oh, okay, these are talented players. They just, maybe they didn't have the information that they needed. Maybe they weren't being used in the various ways that they felt like they were going to be best used. Or maybe they're not being put in the best position to be successful. And in turn, you never saw the team reach its full potential. But instead, you're seeing James Wood thrive. You're seeing C.J. Abrams thrive. And even on the pitching side, Cade Cavalli starting to really come into his own. Foster Griffin was a really great pickup for them to be able to use. And guys that you would have never imagined in different spots are really helping. Like I just mentioned last segment, K-Bert Ruiz was not a good catcher at all. Like he was putrid behind the plate. But what he's been able to do this season where he's really helped you out is nothing short of spectacular. So maybe it is something when they came in here and realized, okay, if we switch some things up, we can still get a lot out of these players that, you know, a lot of people are kind of written off. All right, next, I want to get to the phone lines. Maury Brown of Forbes is going to join us. I want to get his thoughts on the Major League Baseball salary cap and floor that was proposed by Major League Baseball. Is that something that could actually happen? Is that something that's good for the league? We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you for another hour, taking you up until Nationals baseball. Right now it's time to get out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Welcome in our guest from Forbes, Maury Brown. You can check him out on X at BizBallMaury. Maury, how you doing today? Appreciate you joining us.
Hey, I'm doing well, Toby. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So a big part of the discussion around baseball is this year is exciting and it's been a lot of fun, but so many people are wondering what the heck is going to happen next year if we're going to play baseball. And Major League Baseball finally made its first proposal after MLBPA gave their proposal a day earlier this week. And baseball sent out a salary cap and floor. What are your thoughts on that? Is that something that we're going to see, or is that going to be another holdup where we end up with a long lockout because of it?
Well, I think that the lockout is probably a foregone conclusion. The biggest thing will be, will it chew up all of the offseason and start to eat into the beginning of the season, or, more? And those are, I think, open questions right now. I think a lot of us knew that the league was going to offer up a cap and floor proposal. But I think what happens with these early ones is that both sides are going to take big swings, right? They're going to go ahead and do that. And then you're going to feel this out. Now, I think the owners are pretty much locked in on this idea of pushing for the cap and the floor. And what I find interesting, and I'm about ready to publish this next week, is that much of what they're offering is not too dissimilar from what happened in June of 94 leading up to the strike, which, of course, we lost the World Series, right? And it creeped into 1995. So with that, I don't know if it's a wise decision. I think that they're, the owners may look at the position of the players as maybe being different than it was in 94. And maybe the political landscape is a little bit different to shape that and try and get that in. They're the only sport that doesn't have a cap and floor system.
Yeah, I mean, do you think when this all comes to a conclusion and we're hopefully back playing baseball by opening day next year, which I'm not sure if that's going to be the case, but do you think that that'll be in effect, or do you think that the MLBPA is going to be able to be as strong as they've been about opposing that as they have in the past?
Yeah, I don't see the players relenting on this by the beginning of the season. I can't see it. I can't see them really relenting at all. It would be remarkable if they did. I think that, again, you'd have to be a battle of attrition. There's 30 owners. There's thousands of players. Many of them make the league minimum, but the Players Association has been telling the players for pretty much, for several labor deals now, save your money. They, get a war chest put together. The league puts a war chest together and they try and ride it out. Pressure, of course, is early on the players, right? The minute they start to lose paychecks, the pressure's on. For many of the clubs, they don't start to feel pressure until really the summer, right? I mean, kids are out of school. It starts to affect the economics that way. And then there's just the overall, you have all this goodwill built up. The growing attendance, we're going to see attendance increase again this year. Television's been strong. You're going to go ahead and blow that stuff up over the want of a salary cap. And do you do institutional damage? Do fans start to walk away? It's a lot different than 94. There are a lot more options for people to entertain themselves now than back then. And I think that that has to be accounted for.
Talking with Maury Brown from Forbes here about Major League Baseball, whether there's a salary cap floor, whether some of the labor discussions going on. When you look at the player side of things, obviously they don't want the salary cap. What are some of the other things that they're arguing for in this?
Well, I mean, they're going to try and increase, obviously, the bottom. I think that they really want to see some changes around two things. It should be service time manipulation needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gotten a little bit better, but that has been something that, of course, prevents players from entering into salary arbitration and into free agency. So they'll want to see that. They'll want to, of course, want to see the league minimum raised. They will want to see the luxury tax threshold increased. So I would look for those things. Whether they go and look for more around the pre-arbitration pool, which, benefits players before they hit salary arbitration, they may, of course, try and increase that. I would look along the lines of what they have been historically been doing, right? They're not going to do some radical change like the owners are trying to see. They're going to try and continue to increase stuff around it. And they're going to try and advocate to say, look, you want to go ahead and put in a floor or something similar to the luxury tax only at the bottom, go for it. You know, they see the problem more at the bottom than at the top. And again, the players relented many years ago to allow a luxury tax system be put in. They would say, hey, it's only fair that we did that at the top. Why don't you get some of these bottom feeders that are hanging around basically living off revenue sharing to try and compete? That should be the key thing they're going to try and push again. Teams should all want to be competitive, and that's the thing that they'll push for.
Yeah, I think that's something that fans want too, is teams to be competitive. And I think a lot of fans want the salary cap for the reason of, you look at the Dodgers and what they're able to do, and especially the last couple of years where now they're deferring contracts and paying large contracts to guys that teams in other markets just frankly have no chance of getting, and they're looking at that as unfair, yet at the same point, you're seeing the Tampa Bay Rays, you're seeing Cleveland Guardians, Milwaukee Brewers, small market teams still competing. But how do you appease the fans' viewpoint of, I don't want to walk into series with my team that's not the Dodgers, that's not the Yankees, that's not the Mets. I have no chance of getting a guy like a Shohei. I have no chance at a guy like a Juan Soto, while still understanding that they're, you know, probably not going to get a salary cap.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you go ahead and try and tweak the system that they currently have. I mean, you can really make it painful for the likes of the Dodgers and the Mets, right? And the Mets, who have, of course, been lost in this conversation, who, of course, you know, the money isn't helping them.
Yeah.
I think that you're going to have to do it around the system that is in place. And, you know, the economic disparity is there. There needs to be something at the bottom, really, to deal with this. But I would say this. I don't know about you, but when I look at the NFL, it's not like the Cleveland Browns are ripping it up every year. I mean, I don't think that a salary cap automatically means that a lot of these clubs are going to suddenly be competitive. You're putting a constraint around player salaries. Okay. You're not doing anything around the front office. So you're going to provide more resources for the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets to get smarter people to develop, to draft, to do all of those things, to scout. There's no constraint going to be placed around that stuff. So there will always be a situation in which other clubs are going to have a leg up. It happens in the other sports all the time. It's just really constraining around payroll, player payroll. And again, I don't think that that's 100% putting you in a position. The Yankees haven't won a World Series since 2009. The Mets, of course, are a train wreck right now.
Yeah.
And we're seeing, of course, now this is a regular season, and that's something to, you know, take into account. It's not the postseason. The Brewers, the Rays, the Guardians. The A's have been there. They're dropping back. That's normally due to the fact that there's weakness in the AL West right now. But those small market teams are being competitive. So what are we trying to achieve? I think the big thing that gets lost is this will increase franchise values for the owners. That's the key driver in this. It's not about really competitive parity. We do need to do something about economic parity. But this is largely about the owners making more money when it comes time to sell their franchises.
For Rob Manfred, I think this is largely how he's going to be remembered, how this all goes, I would think. I mean, he's said that he's going to step down in 2029, so this could be one of the last real major things that he's done. And I think in his beginning of his tenure, he was not thought of highly, but after some of the changes he's made the last couple of years with the pitch clock, banning the shift and things, like you mentioned, it feels like the arrow's trending really upward. Do you think that there's going to be maybe a push from him to try to get this stuff going so that you can keep some of that positive momentum? And, you know, when he's done in 29, if this thing, you know, is ended more abruptly than maybe we were expecting, it can be a positive light on him as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key thing right now. For one thing, the commissioner works for the owners, right?
Yeah.
So there's an internal push to have the salary cap. And then, look, Rob may want that as well. He may see that as a labor hawk, that it makes sense to have that sort of thing happen. After all, the other, you know, four sports have them, and baseball doesn't. It's been a want for a long time. People have, you know, recency bias. You know, if the last thing that happens with Rob Manfred is they lose a season but don't get a cap, or that you just lose the season and get the cap, that is how he would be remembered. And I don't think that that's a positive, and that would be unfortunate, because I think a lot of the changes that have been made on the field around, you know, whether it's the pitch clock, what have you, around the game, has really improved the product dramatically. So, you know, it would be a black mark. I mean, obviously these things happened under Bud Selig. Obviously the 94 strike, you know, is a horrible thing to have hang over. You would not want to have that repeat. They really, I think, are going, if we don't make this thing happen, you know, they're going to have to pull back and try and do something about it. And the problem with that is, if you stick to this up until, let's say, spring training, then you've got to try and negotiate all the stuff that you normally would. And so you're going to chew into regular season games anyway. So I think the odds of losing regular season games are going to be high, and that's going to be something that'll be on Manfred's resume.
If you had to say right now, when do you think this thing gets resolved?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I would hope that, you know, that the sides would be creative and try and address this issue. They're smart. They should be able to do this. But I don't have a lot of faith that we're going to see a lockout. Secondly, I think that at best you get into a situation like we did the last time this happened, which was we lost the first week, but they compressed the schedule by doing doubleheaders and got all 162 in. I believe that that is becoming more and more difficult to achieve given where the sides are at. You know, at the end of May, having a lockout end at the end of May might be the best thing that you could have happen in the worst way, right? At worst, you're starting to chew into the summer. I don't think we lose an entire season. There'll be so much pressure to make sure that doesn't happen. The owners have new media rights coming up, you know, in 28. You're going to basically poison the well if you lose a season. So, you know, I'm hoping that at worst it's the end of May.
Last thing for you, talking with Maury Brown about the MLB and potential lockout going into next season. How does the Tony Clark side of things, he had to resign, Bruce Myers right now, the interim executive director for MLBPA, how does that play into things? Does that maybe make things a little more difficult since you'd been somewhat working behind the scenes at least a little bit with Tony Clark and now he's out of the chair? Does that affect things at all?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, but probably not. I mean, certainly the optics of it were bad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure on Bruce Meyer, to go ahead and do this and make sure that this happens. He'll, of course, want to move out of the interim tag and into the permanent seat. I think that emboldens the owners. I think they look at it and go, oh, the union may be weak. But, I mean, in practice, it really didn't. Bruce has been the lead negotiator, you know, on the last deal. And then the mini deal that was for the pandemic, he was the one in charge of that as well. Tony would come in and really sign off on it and look at it. You know, people forget that Rob Manfred was the chief negotiator for labor. So he's kind of got an insight on that and could really kind of guide that. Tony was more of a player's guy, right? Yeah. So I don't think it affects things in the long run. I really don't. I think it does. I think the owners believe that maybe the union's weakened. And I think that often what happens with stuff like this is it actually galvanizes the constituency group, you know, the body of the players, and they go, no, you're not going to use this as an opportunity, and they'll push back hard.
Well, Maury, it's great content. Appreciate you hopping on with us, and hopefully we get baseball. I think it's really intriguing to see what's going to happen, and I think it's going to be a long fight, but hopefully it's something that doesn't kill too much baseball for next season. So I appreciate you hopping on with us.
All right, Toby. Thanks so much. Have yourself a great day.
You as well. That's Maury Brown. He joined us on the Rude Guest Hotline, Maury Brown from Forbes. Make sure you check out his work on X at BizBallMaury. Really great stuff from him breaking down the MLB salary cap and floor. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this. The most important thing, I think, for Major League Baseball is not missing games. At 3 o'clock, we'll get back into the Washington Nationals. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Overtime on the Fan. Toby Altizer with you here until 3:30, taking you up until Nationals baseball. Appreciate Maury Brown jumping on with us, talking about MLB salary cap floor. Is that something we could see? I think the most important thing on this for players and owners alike, as we go into basically an inevitable lockout next season, you got to keep the main thing here. You cannot lose the momentum that Major League Baseball has going right now. If you lose a couple of the off-season things, you know, lose a little bit of the hot stove, that's not as big of a deal because I don't know that that drives the casual fans of baseball as much as some other sports. So if you lose some of that, not great, but I think you can live with that. You cannot lose games. You cannot lose some of the special things that come along with spring training and those sorts of things. I don't think you want to miss games and miss spring training and start cutting into the actual season. I just think that that's going to take away from the positive momentum that Major League Baseball is feeling right now. You know, I was talking about it with Maury there. Rob Manfred, when you consider his tenure as commissioner after Bud Selig, you know, at the beginning, Manfred was not highly thought of. And I think you look at him now, and he is much more highly thought of because of some of the changes he's made to the game, and it's really improved it. You know, for a traditionalist like myself, some of the changes I'm still not always the biggest fan of. Like, I don't love the pitch clock at times and those sorts of things, but there's no denying that for the average fan, that it's really improved the product. There's no question about it. I mean, last night's game for the Nationals took over 3 hours. I can only imagine what it would have taken without the pitch clock. And banning the shift and those sorts of things have really improved the game. They've really helped out. And you look at Major League Baseball now, and it's really trending up. People seem to start caring again. And I think, you know, the way that the sport is consumed is really good right now. People are really tuned in to what's going on, and it's a big talking point. And I also think just the way and the nature of baseball works perfectly for our modern world, where a lot of stuff is consumed on social media and moments are sometimes bigger than actual games because of, you know, the fact that you can watch it in a quick TikTok video, you can watch it on a quick Instagram reel, or just a 15-second clip on X as you're scrolling through on Twitter, whatever it may be. Like, I think you're seeing that the game of baseball is doing really, really well. TV numbers are up. Attendance is up. People are kind of coming back towards the game of baseball. And I think if you kill some of that momentum on either side, whether it's the player's side, whether it's the owner's side, it's not a good thing. Because, like Maury mentioned, there are other things to get enamored with. There are other things to care about. You know, if you're baseball and you have some positive momentum, I don't think it's something that you can kill that by carrying this lockout into, you know, months of the season. And hopefully it's something that can be resolved as quickly as possible, because if you can get things going again, then, you know, I think there's going to be some big things to care about this offseason. Tarek Skubal is going to be a free agent this offseason. I think that's going to be a fun storyline to watch. I think you could see some trades go down, because I wonder if some of the trades the last couple of seasons, especially this year, we'll see at the deadline, if they aren't held up a little bit by the fact that there might be a lockout coming next season. So does that open up if everything gets solved and you're good to go for the next couple of seasons that, all right, well, now I can make some of those moves that I wasn't willing to make before I knew that some of this stuff was going to come down. So I think that this is massive for the sport of baseball to make sure that you get this thing going in the right direction, get this thing figured out as soon as possible, because there is so much positive momentum for Major League Baseball. And you just don't want to kill that. When you've got something going good, when you've got everybody seeming to jump back on board, people are going to the ballpark, and I think there's just such a good time right now with Major League Baseball as a whole. And I think even for the Nationals specifically, I think you're seeing a lot of positive momentum, and you just don't want to kill that. And I know it's probably more on the owners than on the players because of the salary cap and this sort of thing, but I'm sure there's going to have to be concessions on both sides. But there's got to be working together to make sure you get this thing on the right side so that way you can not miss any games. That's the main thing here. It's not about being on the correct side or being, just don't miss games. All right, let's get back into the Nationals next. You're listening to Overtime with Toby on the Fan.